views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome. We have got a fabulous, fabulous show for you today. Thank you all for tuning into these amazing segments. Look, many of you have heard me talk about what my journey was like to go back to school down the road, like after I had already been in the workplace. And all of a sudden, somebody said to me, you got to take those exams. You got to take those tests. And here I was, and I was thinking to myself, what test? What do I have to do? Today, we are thrilled. Aaron Lemon-Strauss, joining us here today, Executive Director, College and Career Access, the College Board, is joining us. Parents, your child got their PSAT, NMSQT scores, GREs, all of the above, any score that would ever make people like me break out in a sweat. Aaron, thank you for joining me here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hopefully we can get people to the point where they at least have strategies to avoid breaking out in a sweat.
Yeah. I mean, let's just start with talking about, for many, many people, right? The notion that here we are, you know that your child has got to go take those tests, but the question really is about them. Where do we begin? What do we do? What are they? And are they still important, like number one, as to whether or not your child gets in school? So all of those questions, where do you want to start?
Let's hit them all. I mean, okay. I think that the timing here is good. So about 4 million students, as you mentioned, took the PSAT NMSQT this fall, and they're just getting their scores back now. And so now is the perfect time to look at that and say, okay, well, so how did I do? You know, where how am I set up and what should we work on next? And so that PSAT NMSQT score will give you a read on how your students are doing for college readiness. So you'll be able to see on that score report, you know, is my student on track? Is my student falling a little bit behind and we need to do some work? And that'll give you a really good chance to have a conversation with your student and with his or her guidance counselor to figure out a strategy for, you know, picking colleges and finding scholarships and if necessary, you know, filling in some gaps that may have filled in about a student's sort of reading and writing and math ability.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just talk a little bit about, for people listening, let's just talk a little bit about what the score does and how, if you get your score, you can use it to not just the best of your ability, but to seriously optimize your chances of getting where you want to go.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great question because that, you know, the whole point here is not just to take tests. I mean, we should take fewer tests. The whole point is to unlock opportunity for students. So the PSAT itself is really valuable because it's not actually used for admission, and you know, no one sees it besides you and your guidance counselor. And so it's a chance to sort of see where you're at. It's also been a chance to build from there. So you can use your PSAT performance now to unlock a personalized free SAT practice plan on Khan Academy by going to satpractice.org. That'll give you that personalized plan so that, you know, when you have some opportunities for growth, you know, some places you can fill in some holes, you can get the practice you need, boost your score, and that'll make you eligible for even more colleges and even more scholarship dollars.
You know, one of the things that I think that many of us now know is that these tests are seriously important. They're important for a lot of reasons. They're important for children to really get in the schools they want. And they're important to know how they work. Can we talk for a little bit about how the receiver looks at these scores and what they look for? And I totally agree with you about the practice. I mean, in my case, I hadn't been in school for a while. So the idea of taking a test like this, a really long test like this, was daunting. But the idea of practice and practicing it really eased some of the pain.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. You know, so just to the, I'd love to sort of talk a little bit more on that, but just to the question on how they're used, you know, I think what colleges and universities tell you is that they use holistic admissions, and that's right. So, you know, you had mentioned earlier, is this test the number one thing? Absolutely not. No one should be using, again, we're from the College Board, we're the test maker, and we'd be the first to tell you that no one should be using these tests or results from standardized tests as the be-all and all. They do not define you. They should not be in isolation. All they are meant to do is provide some context for admissions officers who are trying to make a hard decision and, you know, might otherwise struggle to compare similar students who, you know, go to, you know, from across the country and might have a similar GPA, but it turns out that, you know, one of those schools, you know, gives a different kind of A than another school.
Yeah.
So that's what the tests are for. They're to sort of set up a level playing field for students, and they should not be used, and no one should think about them as being sort of the be all and end all. You know, the practice point, you know, like you said, you had mentioned that, and I think we hear this from a lot of students that they, you know, they get nervous about tests, and I hear from some students who feel like they are bad test takers.
Yeah.
I totally understand where that comes from and totally appreciate the feeling behind that. I do think, though, that, like, being a bad test taker is just another way of saying I'm not prepared for this.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, if you spend the time and if I were to say to you, well, here are the exact questions that are going to be on this test, you know, in advance. By, you know, if we sort of broke into the warehouse, and I don't advise this, by the way, but if I gave you the test in advance, you wouldn't be nervous about that, right? Like, you wouldn't have a problem with that. But actually, that is basically possible, because if you put in the time and you practice and you put in the effort, then you basically do know what's going to be on the test. You may not know the exact questions, but you're going to know what the topics are. You're going to feel confident about those topics. You're going to know that you can perform well on those topics. And then you're not going to feel like a bad test taker. You're going to feel like this is your opportunity to shine. And I think students can get there. They just, you know, it's just a matter of putting in the effort.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. I coach new hosts, you know, as the owner of the Transformation Network. One of the things I love to do every year is I work with a handful of people and coach them on how to do outstandingly stellar radio conversations, interviews. But the one thing that you cannot excel at if you don't practice is a venue like this. And you're right about it. I mean, even for the most seasoned adult, practicing something like this takes overcoming a hurdle. Tell me about the resources, because I think that's the missing link here. People need to know that there are resources available.
Right, and that's really important, because of course the old model was you had to pay, you know, for a private tutor or so forth, and that sort of obviously limited the playing field of who would be able to change. And so a couple of years ago, we were very excited to partner with Khan Academy, who folks, especially with high school children, may be familiar with. They're a free website that has learning and practice materials, and we worked with them to build official SAT practice. It's the best way to prepare for the SAT. It just happens to be free. And when you go to SATpractice.org, you're going to get access to thousands of practice items, hundreds of instructional resources, 8 full-length practice tests, all official real SATs from the College Board. And it's all personalized. So if you need to work on, you know, single variable linear equations, and I need to work on some grammar stuff, we're going to be given different paths and different practice plans and different resources. And so that, you know, you can boost your ability to do algebra, and that's going to improve your math score. I'm going to boost my ability on grammar. That's going to boost my reading and writing score. And by doing that, we're all going to grow. And that's possible, right? That we can all improve our SAT scores. The SAT, everyone could get a 1600 on the SAT. If everyone sort of put in the time, and obviously there's a little bit of sort of, natural ability if you're talking about that level. But everyone can grow their score. And it's just a matter of putting in the time. And now that those resources are available for everyone for free, there's the opportunity for folks to do that.
Well, and then, you know, some of this too is also easing the pain of competition. I mean, that's a reoccurring theme. It seems to be, even though you don't know who you're competing against, there's this air of competition. You know, how do you, or what do you advise for making sure that the student focuses on being the best they can be?
That's great. I love your point there, because I do think that, you know, it should be about your performance and the best you can do without needing to worry too much about others. And we actually see examples of that where students form study groups because they know that together they're going to be able to hold each other accountable for doing work and then do better. I think, you know, to me, when we think about sort of helping students be the best that they can be, you know, it's important to keep the goal in mind. So an SAT score by itself, of course, is a meaningless number. The only reason why it matters is one, for scholarship funding, but primarily as a college entrance examination, and for getting students into colleges. And so, you know, it's worth spending time building a college list and looking at colleges that are good fits for you. You can do that, by the way, at our free website, bigfuture.org. And when you do that, you can, you know, find colleges that excite you. Go on a college visit. Many are offered virtually now, so you can do it from your home. And when you get excited about a college and you understand sort of what SAT score you may need in order to be in range there, that can provide the motivation. So, you know, why am I spending an extra hour going over reading comprehension passages? Well, because I need that extra 40 points if I'm going to get myself to Randolph Macon or, you know, whatever school, you know, I've got my eyes set on. I'd encourage spending that time. It's kind of fun to leaf through these college profiles, to be choosing colleges. It's an exciting thing to be doing with your children. And then it can provide that motivation to keep going.
I love it. One last question. Again, how can people find out more? And what's your personal message? What would you like to leave everybody with here today?
So for more information on the test itself, you can go to psat.org. For that free personalized practice plan, head to satpractice.org. And I guess for me, you know, what I would say is that there are so many talented students in this country that have skills and abilities and contributions that they can make. And there is post-secondary education available for everyone, and there's better lives ahead for folks who are willing to take the time, take the effort, and grasp that. There's scholarship money, there's funding. Nothing is beyond your reach if you're willing to put in that effort, if you take advantage of the resources that are out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for today. Thank you, and happy holidays to you.
All right, you too. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. We're going to take a short break, everyone. Please pass this information on, and let's get our kids well-educated, having a great time preparing, and totally out of the box, calm and doing it. We'll be right back.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Okay, this is one of those conversations that everybody should listen up about. Why do seniors refuse help? Why do seniors refuse help? We have now, hot off the press, a recent study that reveals the answers to that question. Thanks to Dr. Lee Lindquist joining me here today, Chief of Geriatrics at Northwestern Medicine. And so here we go. You all know what I'm talking about. Dr. Lindquist, it's great to have you here. Major
thank you
question.
So much for having me.
Yeah.
So we know so many seniors in our life, and many of them we look at and we're like, that one could really use help. Mm-hmm. That person would really benefit if they just, you know, had somebody help them with this. But then what drives me, you know, it just frustrates me at times as a geriatrician here at Northwestern, mm-hmm. is that these patients will sometimes say, you know what, I don't want help, I'm fine, leave me alone. So as part of this research project, we went to the seniors and we said, you know, why are people refusing care? Why are they reluctant to accept help? And a common theme that we heard was that people said, you know what, if I am not able to do this task, that means that I'm going to have to help. If somebody helps me, that means that I'm going to be one step closer to the nursing home. And so they said, you know what, the moment I become less independent is going to mean that I have to go to the nursing home. So if I refuse care, I'll be fine, and I won't go. And it's actually the reverse. We know that people who are in their own homes and get help in their homes don't go to the nursing home as much as people who refuse help. And so we then went forward and we asked people, we said, you know what, how do we get seniors to overcome this help, you know, this reluctance, and accept help in the home? And one of the strategies that they recommended, and this is coming from seniors who are refusing help, is, you know what, if you reframe independence and say, listen, it's not dependence. I'm not dependent on you. It's more of an interdependent. So we all depend on each other in some ways, but it's more of a neighbor-to-neighbor interdependence. Mm. And one of my favorite themes that came up is this idea of joy. So this is the holiday season. And they said, you know what, whenever I've helped people in the past, it gives me such a feeling of joy on the inside, you know, these warm butterflies, this kind of warm, fuzzy feeling because I'm helping that person. And with the holidays among us, you know, everybody knows if I'm giving, if I'm helping, it makes me feel better. So if I let somebody help me, and this is a senior perspective, if I let somebody help me, then I'm going to give that person the opportunity to experience this joy, to experience this warm fuzziness. And so that was one of the key strategies that people said helped. And so when you talk to seniors, instead of saying, you know what, you can't do this, your memory is going, so we're going to hire somebody to help you. And so it's kind of, that's not a very effective way of getting help in the home. What's more effective is saying, you know, this person, you know, that we want to hire to come help you, you know, they're looking to learn a second language or they're looking to get more skills. Can you help, you know, partner with them to show them how to cook? Or, you know, they're doing some volunteering, they'd like to volunteer and come to the house and help you out. And this idea of letting the other person experience joy was one way that seniors and people said this is going to be a way to overcome this reluctance.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, you've really hit it. And a part of this, and I just want to get back to something you did say, is that a lot of times we're not having a conversation about what this help means or what it doesn't mean. You know, we're not. We're, especially if we're looking at family members and the fear in their eyes. And so I think that one of the things that you're talking about is the how we go about this may be more important than the what we're doing. And I think that is really key to introducing new strategies, right?
Exactly. And we also built, to correlate with this, we built a website called planyourlifespan.org, which is available. It's housed here at Northwestern Medicine. And it actually helps seniors to think about what they might need in the future and how to plan to age in place. Because we talk about planning for, you know, end of life mm-hmm. or, you know, picking out a casket when you die. But we don't really talk about what you're going to need in your home when you're in your 70s, 80s, 90s, or 100s to age in place and help you in your own home. And so by having seniors kind of have a voice and be in partnership with family members by going through the Plan Your Lifespan website, it's a publicly available, nationally available with local links. And it actually helps guide the conversation as to what they might need if they, you know, get hospitalized and they need to come home, or if they have worsening memory loss over time. So it's kind of a planning for in the potential future when you might need some help at home.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to ask you as well, because there is a concern that I think came up also in the study for some people that they worry about being taken advantage of. And I think we should address that. And one of the things I think that you touched upon was it's not that somebody walks in your home and you're immediately suspicious, but, you know, they see these folks as authority figures. And, you know, the conversation is, why would you believe me over somebody in authority? How did this show up?
Yeah, and we saw that many seniors said, I don't want to have a helper come into my home or someone to help me with this because I don't trust them. Mm. And so we noticed that it was more along the lines of, you know what, I just had this person come in and start telling me what to do mm-hmm. instead of working in partnership. Mm-hmm. But then also that trust needs to be built. You know, the first time you meet somebody is not really, I don't trust this person, you know, immediately.
Yeah.
So there's talk that people said, you know what, if I, you know, I interview the person, I like the person, and people don't need to always pick the first person that comes, you know, from an agency or a caregiver. They can sometimes have a couple choices. And then from there, build the trust, you know, have them come for a couple hours every few days, you mm-hmm. know, and kind of build it up over time. But it's that trust relationship that kind of has to be built. And I think people are always worried about being scammed or being taken advantage of, and that's where it's important to get family involved, and so that the family is kind of like the second check to make sure they're not taken advantage of.
Yeah, and if they don't have family readily available, certainly friends or someone that they can do
exactly.
a sanity check with.
Yeah, to see if these things are you know, real and legit versus a scam. Mm-hmm. And scam artists are getting very, you know, creative. So I think always good to get family involved with communication and to discuss these things before it ever comes up. And that's why it's important to, you know, keep conversations going with your senior.
All right. I want to ask you this question. A lot of times, right, you look at somebody and you say, oh, my gosh, they could use some help. But when you talk to the individual, they're like, I'm getting along just fine. I'm doing just fine. So I think it's important for us to talk about, for you to share what you discovered about the signs that would be obvious that someone might need help or assistance, rather.
Yeah, and exactly. And there's many, I mean, now we're coming to the holidays. We're going to be visiting, you know, relatives, friends, families who may be seniors. And, you know, there's people that tell you the same story 5-6 times and they're repeating it. And, you know, that may not be, you know, Alzheimer's, you know,
no.
That might just be their personality. And so that's why I always like to loop in the physician. And I'm partial to geriatrics because I'm chief of geriatrics here at Northwestern. But I think looping in the physician as an objective kind of screener where they can do cognition testing, they can look at a person's function and say, okay, this is where you're struggling with, this is where you might need help. And then it's more of an objective person that's able to come in. So it makes the family senior kind of relationship less contentious because there's an objective person that says you might have problems with this or you might need more socialization to help your brain.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think seeing a geriatrician is so important for people as they get older.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is really important because, you know, there are some people, and I'm one of them, where if you were to ask me, what did you do last year for your birthday? I could not tell you. I don't relate to time. Never have related to time. I could never tell you what I did last week for my birthday. And if you don't know who the individual is, you ask somebody like me 4 or 5 questions, and all I could say is, yeah, I don't know. It has to do with the way I see time. So what you talked about is you really have to know the person and the personality before we come to judgment.
Exactly. And I hope you have an exciting birthday one of these years that you remember,
yeah.
Dr. Pat. I'm like, there's got to be one good birthday in there.
Well, I'll tell you, for me, I so live in the moment that when I'm in that birthday, it's all about it, right?
Awesome.
You know, so for me, but I'm not that kind of person. I mean, if you ask, the thing I will tell you, I remember what I did yesterday because I did something that, what did you mention? Joy. That brings me joy. I went and played table tennis with my buddies. And so I will remember that. But if you ask me 4 days from now, hey, what do you remember about playing? Who'd you play? I'm like, I'm so like, that's so yesterday's news. So when I think we're learning more about people, right? We're learning more about
people. Yeah, and I think
people.
That's great. I love that you live in the moment. But yeah, so I think that's awesome. And I think it's important just to get the physician's viewpoint, because
yes.
a lot of this might be your personality versus, yep. you know, something else that's going on. And that's true for so many seniors.
I got to ask you one last question. I know you got to run. There's a thing that I'm discovering, and I discovered it with family members. It's not so much about, yeah, I don't trust people. Yeah, of course, that's part of it. There's this element of, I don't really want to know what's going on here. Did you find anything about that?
Yeah, and we actually had kind of both levels. We
okay.
had people that says, I'm not going to worry about it, so my kids will worry about it.
Okay.
And then other people said, you know, my, and this was even from the adult offspring, the adult kids that said, you know, I don't mm-hmm. want to discuss it with my mom or my dad because I don't want to recognize it.
Yeah.
So denial is one of those things that's out there, but it's not really helping anyone.
No.
So, you know, having this conversation, bridging it is so important.
Wow, you're awesome. Can you please tell us again, how can folks find out more about this? How can family members, you know, if you're not a senior, this is for you too. How can they find out more about this so they understand the best approach to take with their loved ones?
Yeah, and I think you're awesome too, Dr. Pat. I would say visiting planyourlifespan.org, which is the website that helps people plan for these things as they get older and to help them age in place. It's housed here at Northwestern Medicine, a great resource, and to consider seeing a geriatrician as people get older.
And now I have one question that is really, I'm curious about this for you, Dr. Lindquist. Where is or what is your vision? A year from now, what would you like to be talking about as it relates to the new study you'll be presenting?
Yeah, that's actually fun because we're working right now on with Kellogg School of Business here at Northwestern to do a negotiations workshop where we're actually teaching family caregivers how to negotiate with seniors to kind of help them get their needs, because it's a continuing conversation. It's just not one time and you're done.
Yeah.
So by harnessing business negotiation skills, we can actually have better communication with their seniors to help them age in place.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you. A personal message. What are you going to leave everybody with today? And thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Have a great holiday season and enjoy your seniors.
Yeah, let's rock on. Best rock music ever from that generation. Best. Thank you so much. Let's take a short break, everyone. We'll be right back.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Guess what? Our friend Sharon Miller is back. She is head of Small Business Bank of America. Today, what we're talking with you about is, what is it about your business that you can feel the vibe of wanting to expand, of looking for great talent, of knowing what it is that's going on out there that's going to give you some information for us small business owners? What should we know? What are our concerns? What are our aspirations? How do we go about all of this? And what are the data showing? That's why Sharon's joining us here today. Sharon, thank you for coming back.
Well, Dr. Pat, thank you so much for having me.
Let's dig into this. First, tell us a little bit about the study, because I know you all are so very close to small businesses, and thank you for being close to small businesses, because I got to tell you, for a really long time, us small business folks thought nobody was listening. And so thank you all for doing that for us.
Absolutely. That's our passion. That's what we're here to do.
All right. So tell us about the study, and then we're going to dig into what you all discovered.
So we study twice a year our small business owners across the United States to understand how they're feeling about their revenue outlook, what are they feeling about hiring, what about plans to expand. So all of those items are discussed during this survey, and not just from this survey, but you know, to your point, we are Bank of America has been serving business clients for 200 years. We've been doing this survey for 6 years, and it is helpful for us to understand. And what we found in this one was that there is rising revenue and economic confidence across the board for entrepreneurs, and more businesses are looking to hire. And so these are very positive data points as it relates to how business owners are feeling going into 2019 and the year ahead. So, in fact, 80% told us they were confident their year-end revenue would exceed 2017. And this is a three-year high.
Wow. Let's talk about, like, trying to stay in our seats about that level of excitement, because that is really now, I mean, seriously, what we're doing is we're looking at things in a different direction. I know for us, we are really in the vibe of it, right? We're really in seeing how 15 years and going through, for us, the worst economic times you could even imagine, and getting through that, thriving, coming out the other end, has helped us to redefine and reshape our future. What are you finding with small business owners? Are we more willing to step out there and take some risk on people, take some risk on vision? What are we doing?
Yeah, we are seeing that. I mean, we have there is a strong business outlook, and confidence in the economy is remaining strong. And what we're hearing from business owners in this tightest labor market we've seen in a half a century. In fact, in October, the unemployment rate was at 3.7%, and so that's practically full employment. So if you're looking to hire, which small business owners told us they're looking to do, whether that be they want to expand their business and the number of employees, they go from 100 to 150, or they just need to replace attrition, because you're always going to have people leave, either for performance, they get a different opportunity, they've moved, all types of issues. You know, you're going to have some turnover. And in fact, 25% turnover is the number that we're seeing across the board from entrepreneurs when we ask, did they lose one or more employee last year, in the rate of about 25%. Turnover. And so that's pretty high. So a quarter of the workforce is leaving, and you're going to have to replace that. Plus, if you want to hire and expand, you got to hire even more. So the competition is out there to attract and retain talent. And because there is this employees market, really, if they're top talent, they can go where they want to go. So small business owners are thinking about, how do I attract and retain? And that might be a flexible work culture. Maybe they can, you know, have flex time, flex work location, giving time off for volunteering. There's all sorts of creative ways that small business owners and entrepreneurs are thinking about this. And so we've got to continue to advance that, and also make sure that we're reinforcing the benefits. When you go to work for a small company versus a large corporation, many times you're going to have more impact. You're going to have less bureaucracy. So all these things are good, and they're built into how entrepreneurs operate.
Yeah. So in the end, we are really looking at, how should I say it without getting too out there on planet X? We are seeing a shift in energy about the possibilities of the future for small businesses.
I think so. I mean, I think by and large, entrepreneurs are an optimistic bunch. I mean, most people go to open their own business because they want to be their own boss, they want to fulfill their passion, and they have a can-do spirit and attitude. So it doesn't surprise me completely, but it does, you know, when we benchmark this against different points and we see on most economic indicators an all-time high mm-hmm. since our survey, and when we see fading issues, right, so all-time lows for economic concerns, mm-hmm. that to me is a pretty strong indication that there's a shift, as you put it.
Yeah, I got to ask you this. This is one of the things that is really important. Whether it be regular employees or contract employees, there are expectations because employees understand that they have a sense that things are changing. Are we passing on this vibe to our team in the way of perks, bonuses, lunch, raises, whatever that looks like now, right?
Absolutely. And yes, I mean, we're seeing that. In order to retain employees, what's happening is, you know, they're thinking about different strategies. So many of them, to your point, flexible hours, professional development, discretionary bonuses, offering health care, retirement benefits. Those are some of the things that we're hearing from employers, so the small business owners and entrepreneurs, and in fact, 82% told us they've offered at least one of these perks to attract a job candidate. So it's not anymore, you know, just good enough to pay a wage. Nowadays, you've got to compete for top talent. You've got to have a culture that's right, one that might be flexible, and including having health care, retirement benefits, and time for volunteerism. I mean, I've worked for Bank of America 23 years now, and every single year I've taken advantage of what my employer has done, which has given me time off paid to go volunteer. And that's now going into small businesses are thinking about these things. And to me, this has been great for me because I feel like, oh, my employer cares about me and they care about our local communities and business is local. And so all of this is really fueling this energy that's happening in the local markets that we live in and work.
Mm. I know this is a short interview and I know you've got many others to do. How can people find out more about this and also about the services that you all provide?
So you can go to bankofamerica.com/small business. And there's also, you know, we have 4,400 financial centers across the country. And so we have business experts in there that can help you if you want to come in and sit across the desk and have a conversation because every business is different and we're here to help.
All right. Now, I got to ask some of the tougher questions because as a small business owner, Sharon, one of the things that I'm acutely aware of are things that are of concern to me. For example, I am in the state of Washington. And we also do business in other states, but I'm in the state of Washington, and I get an email today or yesterday or one of the days where it indicates that local taxes for small businesses are going to go up. Now, I supposedly live in a state where they are really super mindful about small businesses, yet we continue to see taxes, local taxes, luxury taxes, they call them B&O type, whatever, tax, tax, tax. Are people worried about this?
They are. Mm-hmm. And in fact, taxes were one of the top three concerns, you know, right behind healthcare was trade policy, and then it's taxes. So there's still concern out there. I mean, it's not as if everyone's just, you know, ignoring the fact that there are issues. And so we have to be mindful of that. And we have to make sure that we are, you know, again, back to the, we need to control what we can control because, you know, as much as, you know, I want to be able to set tax policy, I mean, we're always going to have discussions and debate around, you know, trade policy or taxes and healthcare and all the different, and there's going to be an election. So there's always going to be something out there that is happening that really the business owners cannot directly effect. I mean, one-to-one, right? They can have some impact, certainly get out, vote, do all those things, but I'm talking about control, which you can control, which is your business, and then we can help you navigate to some of these things. So to your question of corporate tax, this was also at a low for our survey, so as far as what we've asked people, and as it showed up, but it is significantly down from the fall.
Wow. Okay. Got to ask you, what excites you most, Sharon? I know there's something in there that's really exciting you most here. What excites you most?
Well, I think that, you know, the optimism is certainly exciting where we can be a partner as a bank, as you know, as a company to help fuel the growth through deployment of capital to the local communities we're serving to help grow, to help, you know, add another location. We want to provide access to capital for our clients. And then furthermore, what really gets me going, I'm a woman, you're a woman, we are seeing trends in businesses, and women are opening businesses at twice the rate of men with half the capital. And at Bank of America, we've just launched the Bank of America Institute for Women's Entrepreneurship in partnership with Cornell. And this is a powerful tool that really helps women and all entrepreneurs, but focuses on women and how we can help advance their education, their understanding of business, and how we can continue to promote it. So this is, to me, very exciting. We have a lot going for us in the economy. I feel that business gets local, and we all just need to give back this holiday season through volunteerism, through, you know, frequenting our small businesses that are in our local communities. That's how we can really fuel this U.S. economy, and really, they're the growth engine. And by all accounts, it's looking good going into 2019.
One of the things I want to say to you is that the trend that I'm noticing, and certainly for us, you know, we have gone out and have been able to get some loans so that we can expand and grow. The trend that we're noticing for ourselves as revenue increases, that these loans are pretty much getting paid off. And I would suspect that I'm not alone. I would suspect that with the shift and the patterns you're seeing, small businesses now get to thrive in a whole nother way. And we've done some very creative things, most of us, to stay in business through the tough times and even excel and thrive. Are you seeing that in terms of small businesses now planning a future without these extraordinarily ridiculous interest rate loans?
Well, you know, when we asked, are you looking to apply for a loan in the next 12 months, 15% told us they were.
Yes.
So this is the highest percentage in the last 3 years, nearly doubling from 8% in the fall. But 15% of business owners applying for a loan, to your point, I mean, it's not 50%, right? And so they are accessing capital in other ways. And I would say that, you know, many times when business owners get started, they're reaching into their own pockets or going to family and friends or using credit cards, because it does take a track record of success of a business and revenues that can support and pay back a loan in order to qualify for a bank loan. And so, you know, these are some of the considerations, and we do see expansion, but you're right, with corporate taxes lower. Now, however, we just talked about some state taxes that continue to go up, but with more cash flow, generally speaking, you're going to have more to invest back in your business.
Wow, I love
it. Without having to take the loan.
I love it. This is so cool. Sharon, I know you got to run. Thank you so much for today. Again, please give out the website.
www.bankofamerica.com/smallbusiness. And Dr. Pat, thank you so much for having me on.
I can't wait till you come back. I can't wait till we see what is next, what you're going to share with us.
Yeah. Well, the spring, we're going to get into the report, so I can't wait to come back.
Oh, it's going to be great. Sharon, thank you so much. Thanks to our friends at Bank of America for helping, and thanks to them for helping me personally, which means it's helping all of you out there listening to the show, because their guidance and direction has helped us not just be in the place of business, but thrive to support all of you. Thanks, Sharon. Thank you all. Let's take a short break. Hey, everybody. Welcome to our good news segment. We are so thrilled to have Cindy Beyer joining us here today, president and CEO of Brookdale. Today, what we're looking for is this. Have you ever been in a position where you just don't know, one, what question to ask about your aging parents, your aging grandparents, anybody in your family that may be looking for another alternative to having a fabulous, fabulous senior life? Well, senior living expert is going to be with us right now. Cindy is here to talk to us about what we need to look for, and so that we are aware what our loved ones' needs are and how to find out what the best solution is. It's all about the solution, isn't it, Cindy?
It is all about the solution and allowing seniors to live the absolute best life that is possible for them.
Let's start the conversation with the following, if you don't mind. We have our family and loved ones who are in their new surroundings, right? Here they are. It's the holidays. We've done a great job of making sure they're getting the best possible care. But let's be very clear that we are in unprecedented times. One-third of seniors live alone, and they have physical limitations. Depression is number one. I mean, we are just not talking enough about this. Give us the backdrop, and then let's talk about what the holiday messages y'all are putting together.
Sure. You point out a great point. Isolation is one of the significant issues that our seniors face. And so it's really important, particularly during the holidays, to make sure that you understand the challenges that your loved one may be facing. I know for me personally, I talked to my mom 5 times a day, but it wasn't until I was face to face with her and had enough time to really understand the challenges that she was facing. With so many adult children living hundreds of miles away from their parents, when they go home for the holidays, it's really the only time of year that they get to spend an extended amount of time in their parents' home. And this is a great opportunity to check in on whether your senior parents are struggling to complete their daily lives and to have a conversation about their long-term goals and their care plans. As the nation's largest senior living provider, Brookfield's committed to helping seniors live the best life that's possible for them. That's why we're here today, and that's why it's important to share the signs that your loved one may need more help and assistance, and to give you some tips about starting that conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about this not too long ago. Maybe it could be the last time you were here. But, you know, you are part of a leadership team. And one of the things I want to ask you about around this is we think sometimes that our parents should just tell us what they need. I got to tell you, I don't know about your parents, but my parents never asked for something they need. It was hard to find out what they needed on an average level, right? But to let alone for them to say, I really need more, I really need this. I'm not sure that they really, one, know how to do it. So what kind of skills do we have to learn here?
Dr. Pat, you're absolutely right. Often parents don't want to share with us the challenges that they're facing. So when we're home, we want to look for physical, memory, habitual, and sensory changes. And let me give you some ideas about what you might look for.
Yeah.
Let's start with physical appearance. That can speak volumes about whether your parents are taking care of themselves. Do they have poor hygiene or lack of grooming? Have they lost weight? Are they unsteady on their feet? Or is there a lot of bruises that demonstrate that they're facing some physical challenges? Memory is also something to watch out for. Some memory loss is natural, like forgetting where your car keys are or taking a few seconds to search for a word. But there are changes that disrupt daily life, like forgetting recently learned information, having trouble or difficulty carrying on a conversation, or maybe not being able to complete that task that they've done 100 times. For me, with my father-in-law, we noticed that he would ask the same question 5 times during dinner. That was a sign that he was struggling with dementia, and we were able to get him help. Now, there are some sensory changes, as you know, that are a normal part of aging, but others indicate underlying health issues. So look for signs of vision, hearing, smell, or taste loss. Are the dishes not as clean as they should be? Maybe it's because your mom or dad doesn't see as well as they used to. Or are they eating less because food just doesn't taste good anymore? I always like to look in the garage. And if you think about the car, maybe it's had a fender bender.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's a sign that mom or dad shouldn't be driving anymore.
Yeah. What everything you're pointing out is really so important. Let me get to the next part of this, which I've seen actually happen. Now you notice these, right? Here we are, Cindy. Now you notice them. I know that fear shows up in every family. I know it does. It did for me, did for my friends, right? And we're trying to explore, is this the time for mom to move into long-term care? And sometimes our fear comes forward, so we don't have that conversation in a way that allows our family member to show up and be present. You know, and what I'm trying to say is, I mean, how often do we sit at the table and mom or dad repeats, just like you said, five times, and we're like, what's wrong with you? You know, we're like already jumping down their throats. I mean, this is not the way to really foster trust and care so that our family member feels, yeah, you really are looking out for me. You know what I'm saying here? We got to have a different conversation, right? So let's get into what that would look like.
Yep. The first thing I will say is you're absolutely right. There is a lot of fear. But what you have to recognize is that no conversation or no decision is a decision in and of itself. And you don't want to prevent your loved one from having the best life possible. So I think the most important thing is to really ask your mom or your dad, what are your long-term goals? And how can I support you in achieving them? Once you understand your parents' wishes, then you can work together to reach the goals and to make a long-term care partnership so that you make the best decisions. This puts your parent in control of the conversation, and it also helps make sure that they don't feel attacked or interrogated. I think there are some questions that can help you get a better sense of how your parents are managing their day-to-day tasks. For instance, if you see a lot of medicine on the counter or in the medicine cabinet, might ask mom or dad just to walk you through the medicines and ask when she takes them. This will help you understand what the prescriptions that she has are and if she's managing them properly. If she's not, it's likely that she needs help, and you can work with her to get the right solution. Another good question is asking mom or dad what you normally eat for dinner. This will help you understand if they've got a properly balanced diet, and if they're able to prepare a meal for themselves. Another good question is, hey, what'd you do last Saturday night? If they always went out for dinner and a movie and they're staying home, that may be a sign that they're just not able to have the life that they used to have, but they may still want to be engaged, and they may be feeling isolated. But if you have a conversation about your parents' long-term goals, you can talk through various solutions. And you can start each conversation with, I know you, and that helps empower your loved one. For example, you might say, I know you want to stay in your home, but you're having trouble with the housework. So how about if we look at a cleaning service to take some of that burden off your shoulders?
Yeah.
Or, I know your goal is to stay healthy, but I'm concerned about your medication management. And I've got some home health options to make it easier on you.
I want to ask you this question because let's take it to the next level. How can people find out more about this? Let's make sure everybody has got the right information.
Information is power, and I am a checklist person. So I will say that BrookdaleNews.com has a wonderful checklist to help you deal with these issues. Let's face it, everyone gets old, but we all age differently, and this checklist will show you what signs might indicate that your parents need more assistance, and they can help you make those good decisions to provide the best quality of life and to keep your parents safe. It will also help you with the tough conversations that you need to have with your parents, and that gives you tips for starting the conversation. Most importantly, though, make sure that you take time to enjoy the time together, to make memories with your families, not just gauge their parents' well-being. The well-being shouldn't overshadow the visit, but it's a good time to start the conversation, to build that partnership for your parents.
Yeah. Wow. You know, this is so amazing. I know I have time maybe for one more question, and here's what it is. This is the holidays. There are a couple schools of thought that I hadn't asked you about. There's a school of thought where people say, yep, you're coming up on the holiday. You should be more observant. You know, bring it up on the... I mean, I am not a fan of having this conversation on the holiday, but that's my fear. Timing, they say, is everything. How does it play out when we're talking about this, Cindy?
I actually think the conversation is a gift. And my personal experience with my mom, hard to start the conversation, but her world had shrunk, and she wasn't really feeling very comfortable, but she didn't want to ask for help. When we reached a decision together and she went into a long-term care community, her world expanded, and she was able to live a great life. And for me, I got the gift of becoming my mother's daughter again. So I want to make sure that you have the time to know what's best for your parent, to figure out the right timing. That's an individual decision. But I want to make sure that everyone enjoys a happy, healthy, and safe holiday season. Make sure that this conversation doesn't overshadow your visit and that you have lots of time for wonderful memories.
Yeah.
But if you do notice changes in your parent, it's a good time to have a conversation now. And BrookdaleNews.com can give you all the tools to start that conversation.
I love it. Please, website one more time. And then, Cindy, personal message from you.
Okay. So the website is BrookdaleNews.com. And the personal message for me is that I don't want any senior to be alone during the holidays. If your children can't be with their parents and a senior is going to be alone, reach out to Brookdale. We'd love to have you celebrate Christmas with us. You can find a community near you at brookdale.com. And we wish you just a happy, healthy holiday season.
I love it. Cindy Beyer, everybody. BrookdaleNews.com. I'm Dr. Pat. We're going to take a short break. More coming right now on Transformation Talk Radio.